welcome to class today. We're going to start a little different than usual. I had a student ask me to write a poem about this course. So we're going to start with a poem I wrote about this course in the last week. In just one course, we learned a code which didn't make our heads explode. We learned of loops, both for and while. Of methods, we learned quite a pile of useful facts, like how they run and how recursion makes them hum. Of ifs, assignments, scope, and class, we learned from day one to the last. Well, this dot rhyme has made no sense. Repeat this class and don't feel dense. Sometimes it takes a while, it's true, to understand what code can do. All right, we have one matter of business. We will mention this again on Monday, but some of you won't be here, so I'll mention it now. The final, unlike our best desire to have you all in one room, so we could do it once, we have you in five rooms, and all at the same time. But which room are you in depends on. We tried lots of ways of splitting it up, and it turned out the only way to get the right number of people per room was to split you up based on the number in your computing ID. Okay? And so here are the rooms. You'll need to go to the right room. If you go to the wrong room, we will not have an exam or a seat for you. So we'll talk about that some more on Monday, but I wanted to give you a heads up so you can tell all of your friends who aren't here that they should not come to this room because this, the final one, will not be here. If you have qualified for makeup exam and I have sent you email, I still don't know what the room will be. I have asked for a room and they said no, so I've asked for another one and I'm waiting to hear back. I will email out those people when I know the room for the makeup exam. That is all the business I have. Questions, comments, concerns, or other things for me? Okay, so on my way down here, Sam told me that what I was planning to do for lecture was boring. And he convinced me that we ought to let you choose what you want to do. So, here are 11 possible things we could do for class today. I'll let you read them for a moment, and then we'll take a vote. But before we take a vote, if anybody wants me to add something to the list that is not on the list, now is the time to tell me. Yes. Well, I probably won't have time to do them all. Is that a hand? No?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. So we'll vote in a moment. Are there any other ideas you want me to add to the list? Yes. What do I mean by number 11? How to force people to bump in. My master's research was how to do collision avoidance, and along the way I figured out how to force people to walk into me and then apologize for doing it. Okay. All right, we ready to vote? Okay, I don't care how many times you vote, but we're only going to start with one, right? So if you vote for them all, it's the same as voting for none. Okay, so, number 3, more class coding and alternative designs. Sounds like everybody agrees with Sam. Number 4, watch me live code some game in 50 minutes. It's like about a third, though, close to half the class. Number 5, principles of game design. That's not as much as number 4, so far we're not there. Algorithms like maze solving. 1.5. How networks work. 2, 3. How computers work, the hardware side of things. 1, 2, 3, 4. Somebody's double voting. We're about 10 there, but we're still not as good as watching me live code joust. What big data means. 3. What the cloud is. Oh, that's close to joust. We may have to do a runoff between the cloud and live coding a game. How to force people to bump into you. Oh, wow, that wins. Okay, so how to force people to bump into you. Why computers always mess up decimal numbers? Nope. And how Kant and Socrates would code?
Yes.
Okay, but not as much as forcing people to bump into you or live coding joust. All right, so we're going to start with how we force people to bump into you. All right, well, this will be fun. All right, so let's start with the basics of collision avoidance. And to back up, we're going to have to talk about the basics of of what most of computer science is, okay? This course has taught you to program. Programming is not computer science. It has taught you the very tip of the iceberg of software engineering. How do you pick a better algorithm? That's also not computer science. Computer science is the science that these techniques enable. So it's about studying what is it possible to do, how fast is it possible to do it, and so on. And so all kinds of different problems show up. One of the problems that shows up is collision avoidance. I have things moving, and I don't want them to bump into each other, right? So I've got something moving, and I've got something over here that maybe is also moving, and I don't want them to crash. That's a problem. In computer science, the question is, how good can I get at solving this problem? When is it impossible to solve? How quickly can I solve it? And so on. One of the simplest of all techniques is you just assume everything has a fixed velocity. So, we're going to ask a little question here. Let's suppose that you're on a boat. Let's suppose you're on an old sailing boat. Old sailing boats have square sails. That's how you can tell they're old, right? Okay, you're on this old sailing boat going across the ocean. You're standing up here trying to decide what you ought to do as it's sailing along. And you see out in the distance another boat. Okay? And you do not want to bump into the other boat. How can you tell if you are on a collision course with the other boat? Yes?
If you look at the other one's size and velocity and direction.
All right, so you look at its size, velocity as a direction. Okay. All right, so we'll pretend your chair is a boat, and here's another boat. Okay. Now tell me the size, velocity, and position of this boat that I'm moving. Can't do it, right? So, yes, the math is great, but it doesn't work in the real world. How do you know if somebody's going to bump into you? Yeah. You see them coming right at you. What do you mean by that? They are getting bigger and closer to you. Okay, so let's do an overhead view this time. I'm standing here, there's my nose, right? And you're over here, there's your nose. We have big noses so we can tell what direction we're facing, okay? Now, you will get bigger if you're walking straight towards me, but you'll also get bigger if you're just sort of walking slightly towards me, right? So getting bigger is not enough. Yes?
If you're moving, you stay at the same angle.
If I was moving and I stay, what do you mean stay at the same angle?
In relation, so if like you're moving and the person that you're looking at remains at the same angle, then that's what you're doing.
Ah, yes, this is true, okay? But let's talk about a slightly different version of it. Instead of thinking about an overhead view, let's think about the view from your own face, okay? So I am looking out, I can see about 100 degrees. Most people, that has about how much peripheral vision they have, right? So I've got some amount of stuff I can view, except I can't see this because there's a nose in the middle, right? And as I'm looking out, somewhere out here, I see some person, and I see that they're walking, okay? And how do I know if they're walking into me? They are walking into me if sort of I draw a little bubble around them, and if there is any point in the bubble that stays in the bubble as they move, okay, then they are walking into me. Or in other words of putting it, if the left side of the bubble is moving to my left in my field of vision and the right side is moving to my right, then they're on a collision course with me. Okay? People knew about this way back when. You'd sit on your sailing boat, you'd see some other ship, you'd decide, do I need to tack my sails or not? You say, are they moving? No. Okay, we're about to collide, and you'd move. Okay? So people have known about this for thousands of years, and all of us have it built into our head without knowing it. This will come into how you make people bump into you in a moment. Okay? So the basic idea of collision avoidance, the simplest kind of collision avoidance, is you do this kind of computation where you try to say, are they moving relative to my field of view? If they are, I'm colliding. If they aren't, I'm not. Okay? I got that backwards. If they aren't moving relative to my field of view, I am colliding with them. If they are, I am not. And you can basically just tweak your position until both sides of them are moving in the same direction relative to you. Right? So if I start moving over to the right, their whole being will start moving to my left. I am no longer on a collision course. I am going to pass on their right side. okay? Because they're going to move across my field of view before I bump into them. There's all kinds of nuances about how exactly you compute this and so on, but it's the core of a lot of collision avoidance algorithms. So I learned this, I wrote this in code, everything was honky-dory, and my robots kept crashing into each other in simulation, and that was not good. I didn't want them to do that in the real world. And so I happened to have a corner office that overlooked this gigantic open space where six different sidewalks met. And there's this big, open, paved area. Six sidewalks came in, and in the 10 minutes between class, people would come from all six sidewalks and be going to any of the six sidewalks, and they'd all be trying to navigate across this big, open space. And so I would just sit out my window and stare at people and try to figure out why they aren't bumping into each other, because they almost never did, right? And I discovered a very important thing, okay? This model will only tell you about constant velocity. So under the hood, this works only if you're never going to change direction. And if you have a big crowd, people are going to change direction because they're trying to move around somebody else. They're not aiming at their destination, they're aiming around an obstacle. And so what turns out is people actually will communicate accidentally where they're planning to go next. Okay? So Sam, I need you to be an example for me. You're welcome to just stand perfectly still, okay? Now let's suppose I want to get exactly behind Sam, okay? I'm not going to walk straight at him. Well, for a little while I will. And then I'll say, oh, we're getting too close. And then I'll decide one direction or the other of him to go on, right? So I may decide I'm going to go on this side. But as I do that, I will subconsciously tilt my head to get a better view of what's behind him, to see if there's some other obstacle. So I'll go like this as I go around, right? And I'll just sort of lean with my head and show everybody where I'm going to go next. So how I hold my head communicates my next direction. And it's very hard to change this. Anybody who's walking through a crowded area will use their head to sort of tell people where they're going next. And we learn to pick this up. You can see somebody's head, and I might see Sam walking towards... I need a third volunteer. Yes, come on up here. All right, let's see if I can teach you all what you need to know to make this demo work. Okay. So let's suppose, how will we do this well? All right, let's have you stand right here. Great. Sam, you'll continue standing there. Now let's suppose I want to get back to the staircase, okay? So what's the path I want to follow? I want to go on this side and then on this side and wander around, okay? That's what I want to do because that's the fastest direction. It's sort of snaking between them. As I'm doing this, I decide to move to the left first, but because I want to turn to the right, I will tilt my head as if I'm about to turn to the right. Sam will subconsciously notice this and know he doesn't have to dodge me because I'm about to get out of his way. Okay? So Sam will just continue a straight line in a collision course with me because he can see from my head that I'm about to get out of his way. Okay? And I thought, this just doesn't make sense. Thank you. You're both welcome to sit down. I saw this. It didn't make a lot of sense. I didn't think people were that perceptive. So I went out in the big open space in the busiest times of day, and I would use my head the wrong way, right? So I would just walk along. I walk in a collision course with somebody and hold my head as if I was not going to bump into them, okay? And at some point, they would get scared, and they would suddenly start to switch. And as soon as they switch, I would pop my head the other way. I would keep on a perfectly straight path. I just, right? It takes a lot of practice, and people have to genuinely be in a hurry for it to work. If they're not in a hurry, they'll just stop. But they're actually in a hurry. They will do this. They'll get all frantic. Sometimes they'll physically collide. Sometimes they'll stop 3 feet away and say, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, yeah. Anyway, how do you make people bump into you? Questions? Okay. Well, I can talk a lot more about these algorithms if you want. Who wants me to continue talking about collision avoidance algorithms? Not a majority. Okay. So, great. We've now learned how to force people to bump into you. So I think the ones that... Well, yeah, we haven't finished doing that. It's a little difficult to describe what you do with your head. So I think that, let's see if this is the right order. Is this right? Is this the order we had here? I think it is. Let me just quick check. Live code a game. How cotton Socrates would code. How computers work. Okay, I misremembered that one. More class coding. I know nobody wanted to do that. Game design. Algorithms. Okay, we can just wipe that one too. Then networks. You can wipe that one. Big data. Nope, wipe that one. Cloud. All right, that's where we had some stuff. That's right. Okay. And I know we didn't want that one. All right, so. You want me to watch me live code a game? How much time do we have? We've got 34 minutes. And you want me to watch me live code a game? Do you want me to do Joust or Flappy Birds or something else? Joust. Four. Flappy Birds.
Mario.
The rest. Mario. Anything other than those three? Okay, let's try that again. Well, it sounds like either Flappy Birds or Mario. Flappy Birds. Mario. Mario wins today. All right, so we're going to count Mario in just a few minutes. Isn't this going to be fun? All right. So we're going to start by making a jumper class. Hey. I'm going to have to find out where I'm putting it, so I'll put it in today's class. Da-da. All right, so I know in Mario I need to have something that can jump. And this thing that can jump, it's going to have some position because Mario kind of doesn't stop immediately, right? That's why he sometimes falls off of his pipes. So he's going to have some sort of velocity. So I'm going to make myself an X and a Y and a velocity X and a velocity Y. Okay? That's going to be telling me about the position of my jumper. My jumper is also, well, so that's all of the information I really need to know about my jumper. Let's make ourselves a jumper constructor. And X equals Y equals, I'm going to do a lot of shortcuts because I don't have a lot of time. Turns out you can initialize a lot of things all at once. Surprise! Okay. I'm going to make a public void method, which I'm going to call tick, and I'm going to allow some amount of seconds to pass in that tick. The amount of time that passes, okay, in that tick. Oh, let's make ourselves a public static final double gravity. And let's also make one for drag. Oh, no, I'm not going to have drag because we don't in Mario, right? But we have friction, okay? So we have friction and gravity, and I need to give them values. Let's make gravity be 1, and let's make friction be 0.95. I'm picking numbers mostly out of thin air, but they'll end up meaning something anyway. Y, we will decide that positive Y is down, because that's how J frames work by default. So I'm going to say that the velocity in Y is going to be plus the gravity times the amount of time that's passed squared. Right, because, just singled, right? So the times the gravity times the time that's passed, and the velocity in X is going to get multiplied by, if this is on ground, if I am on the ground, then I'm going to apply some friction. That's going to be too big friction. Let's make it a little smaller. I'm going to have to make an on-ground method to decide if I'm on the ground or not. So I'm going to make some on-ground method. Right now, it's just always going to say false. I'll fix that later. I'll leave the to-do in even. Okay? Great. And then I'm going to say that x plus equals vx and y plus equals vy. Woo! All right. So I've got some gravity. I've got some friction. I'm doing all right. I'm going to make some basic methods to decide. Let's make this guy able to listen to keys. So there's this thing called a key listener. It was built into your previous assignment. I didn't tell you how it worked. I'm just going to say it magically exists here. But this is going to allow me to react to various keys existing so that I can tell when somebody presses a various key. Okay, so key pressed when somebody presses if e dot get key code is the same thing as the key event dot key left arrow, what is it called? Value value key left, perhaps. Let's see if that works. Value key left, hooray, I found it. All right, so if they press the left key, then my velocity in X is going to equal, I don't know, let's say we move 3 pixels a frame if our velocity is there, except I want that to be negative because left is to the negative direction, and if it's right, I'm gonna make it to the positive direction. And if, how about if it's up? Let's use up for jump instead of something else, because why not? So if it's up and this is on the ground, then my velocity in Y is going to be a big number. How about up? Let's say 20. That probably will be pretty small jumps. But we got some basics here. Okay, so we got some keys. We don't really care if the keys are released or typed. Pressed is good enough for us. Okay. This won't be quite like Mario, because really in Mario, actually, after you jump, there's a little time when you can keep holding the up so we can make small jumps and big jumps. I'm going to ignore that for the moment and assume every jump's exactly the same size because I don't have a whole lot of time to do this in. Great, so I've got my jumper. I've got a key listener for my jumper. I can tick. I can see if I'm on the ground. I now need to have a window. Oh boy, a window. Okay, so let's see. I probably have a window sitting around here somewhere I can use. Maybe I don't have a window sitting around here somewhere I can use. Let's see if I have one for the other class. Otherwise, I'm going to have to design a window from scratch, and that's going to be vaguely confusing. Can I use World? Yeah, kind of. World has all kinds of weird stuff in order to follow trails of what turtles do as they move. I think I'd be better off to download Joust. So I think I'm going to go download Joust. So let me go to the homework page. Hope that the website's up. Well, that's loading. Okay, so I'm going to have some sort of draw method in here. I know that's going to happen because I'm going to have to be able to draw my guy. Oh, thank you. Precious seconds being lost. All right, so I'm going to have to draw it. Let's make this a graphics 2D because I like them better than the other kind. There are two kinds of graphics. Who knew? All right, so we're going to figure out how that gets drawn. Oh, bother, I forgot this has to happen. There we go. Joust, here we are. Let's download. I don't care about Bird, but I do care about Joust screen. Let's save this link. Oh, bother. I didn't want it to be in there, and it's such a weird file system. All right, it's moving faster than usual. Great, let's save that in the Joust there. Let's go ahead and save Bird just in case we decide we want it. We probably won't, but we can save it, and it doesn't take any extra time. We better reload this list of things. That's the wrong section. We better reload this list of things. There's Joust. Joust screen. Okay, so Joust screen has most of what I want. Actually, let's just rename this. Let's call it jumper screen. Ta-da! Oh, yeah, it doesn't like things. I don't care. All right, so I've got a jumper screen, and what does my jumper screen do right now? I've got to remind myself because I wrote this, I don't know, a little while ago. I've got a timer, that's good. I've got the ability to draw things, do-do-do. Anything else I might need? I'm going to need to have a jumper, so I'll make a private jumper field, and I'll initialize that in here. So I'm going to say this.jumper equals a new jumper. Okay, so I've got myself something that can jump. I'm not going to change the next two lines because I told them myself not to. I don't need to do this anymore. In particular, actually, my key listener is going to be my jumper because that's where I put all of that information. So I'm going to change my key listener to be jumper instead of this, violating my do not change anything over here, but that's going to speed things up a little bit for me. Let's get rid of the key adapter as a consequence because we don't need that anymore. All right, so now my jumper is going to listen to keys, and I've got a timer that's going to run along, and every time an action is performed, nothing's going to happen, but I've got to refresh the screen. Refresh screen works. Let's make sure that I get an empty window up here. I get an empty window that calls itself a Joust clone and blows up in some way. I want to change the name of that to be Mario, even though it's never going to get to be a clone in the amount of time we have left. And what's the error message? We have an exception caused by action perform caused by birds not existing. Okay, great. Where did I talk about bird? Bird. Oh, right here. That was... Okay. Oops. Somewhere I'm making a new bird and I shouldn't be doing that. Okay. So what I want to do instead is do this dot jumper dot draw with the graphics object I have on hand. I don't have a graphics object on hand. It's called this dot paintbrush. Great. I know I'm drawing that. I'll just nix all this stuff because I don't care. Hooray! It pops up and it doesn't draw anything because I didn't tell it how to draw a jumper. Let's remind ourselves how we... let's grab how we create pictures from bird. Yada yada. Let's just grab one of these at random. You know what? I'm not going to have time to download the best picture, so we're going to draw our jumper just as a circle. Let's see. Our jumper should be... How big should our jumper be? Let's make our jumper... How about we make our jumper 20 pixels wide and 60 pixels tall, and I should really make those constants in the class, but I'm not going to because I don't have the time. And so then I'm going to want it to be located at the integer version, because Phil Oval wants integers, of the y minus half the height. Okay. And I'm going to want it to be at the integer version of the x minus half the width. And again, those would be much better as constants, but meh. Okay, I better also set the color because I need to set the color. Let's make our jumper dark gray, sounds good to me. Okay, let's run this. Okay, I've got my jumper up in the top left corner. It's not doing anything yet, but we're getting there. Now let's say, okay, I've got my jumper exists. Now over my jumper screen, every time there's a tick, I am going to call this dot jumper dot tick. And let's say that this ticks, I think it ticks, pardon me, I think it ticks 50 times a second. So let's say that is going to be 0.02 ticks. And I run that, and hooray, my jumper falls, but gravity is way too slow. That's sort of blimpish. All right, so let's make gravity a lot stronger. Let's try that again. Nah, that's still a little slow. That's better. All right, so now we've got some gravity. Now we need to make some ground. Hooray, ground. All right, so to make some ground, I'm going to have to decide what the ground is. So let's over my jumper screen. Let's make ourselves, how about we make an array list of rectangles to be the ground. This will end up also being, oops, I need to give it a name, don't I? I need to call this, well, let's call it walls. I'll end up putting things like pipes and walls and so on in it. In the original Mario, it's made entirely out of squares. Every wall thing is aligned with a square, but I'm going to let them be general rectangle objects. So if I'm making it, I better initialize it here to be a new array list of rectangles. Okay, so I have my new array list of rectangles, and let's just start by adding one in there. So let's do this dot walls dot add. Let's add something that's groundish. So new rectangle, and it's going to want an x, y, a width, and a height. So I need an x, a y, a width, and a height. Let's say it's at 0x at the edge of the screen. Let's put it, I've got a 600 tall window, so let's put it at 550. And let's say it's just 30 by 30, no, I don't want to be 30 wide. Let's make it as wide as the screen, and let's make it 30 tall. Okay, and I better draw those, otherwise I won't be able to see them. So I will look at every rectangle in my list of rectangles. Surprise, there's another shortcut. And then I'm going to do this. Oh, I better set the color first. Let's do this dot paintbrush. Brush. Set color, oh, not set clip, set color. We'll make the walls all, how about we make them white because, you know, why not? And then this dot fill R, oops, nope, not this dot fill R, this dot paint brush dot fill R. And all right, so now we should see the ground. And we drop right through it. No great surprise there. So now we need to say this dot jumper dot bounce off of, not bounce, Mario doesn't bounce, right? Bump into this dot walls. Let's not do the whole walls at once. Let's do that up here again. Rectangle R in this dot walls. Let's bump into that rectangle. We don't have the bump into method yet. Let's tell Java they can go and create the basics of it for me, and I'll flesh it out. So if I'm going to bump into a wall, I'm going to have to find the intersection and decide if I bumped into it. And so that means I'm going to make my rectangle overlap is going to equal R dot intersection with, here's the rectangle that I am. I should probably make that out in a separate method. Let me do that right now. Public rectangle bounds. And this is going to return a new rectangle that is that rectangle. And then, so if this dot bounds dot intersection of R, there's my intersection, that's my overlap. But I probably only want to do that sometime. So if this dot bounds dot intersect, not insert side, intersects R, then I want to find the overlap to figure out what side of it I hit. Isn't this fun? All right. So if the overlap dot width is greater than the overlap dot height, then I'm going to assume that means I hit the side. I'll just note that down here. Hit the side. We'll handle hitting the side later. So I'll make a fix me do this. Right? And otherwise, I must have hit either the top or the bottom. So now I need to decide if I hit the top or if I hit the bottom. So let's say if this dot y is greater than r dot get center y. So if the center of me is bigger than the center of this, then I am below. So I hit the bottom. Okay. I better decide what to do there at some point, but I don't need that for just hitting the ground yet. So I hit the bottom, so here I hit the top, So if I hit the top, then I'm going to set my velocity in y to 0, and I'm going to set my on the ground is true because I just hit the ground. I'm going to set my this dot y is going to equal the height I am plus, actually let's make it one less than the height so that I don't keep hitting the ground every other time. I'll hit it every time instead. So half of my height minus 1 plus the top of the box. So I don't know why friction keeps appearing. R dot get minimum y. They're going to want me to cache that because that's a double. Okay, so if I hit the ground, I do that. I better make this field because I just used it. So I'm going to have this field that keeps track of if I'm on the ground or not. That's what on the ground is going to do. It's just going to return what that one is. This dot on the ground. Okay, but I better change it to not be on the ground every time ticks. In case I jumped. So where is the tick here? Tick. I'll then say this dot on the ground equals false. So I'll set it on the ground to be false every time, and then the next time I'll come back and set it back to being true down in the bump into method. Okay, so I could tell it'll keep happening over and over again. All right, so now I've bumped into the ground. So now if I do this, I should be able to run this and I should land. Oh, I jumped right on through. That was bad. Right, I need this to be minus instead, because I forgot that up is negative, not positive. Boonk. Oh, it's sort of jiggling there, but that's okay. We can get rid of the jiggling somehow, but for now, we're okay. Ew. That's a really big jump. That's a really big jump. Okay. All right, so let's fix the really big jump to be a slightly bigger jump. Where did we decide how much to add at a jump? That would have been in the on-key press. We said negative 10. Let's try negative 10. Dun, dun, boing. Okay, this jiggling on the ground is not going to be really helpful. So let's figure out why it's jiggling on the ground. That probably has because I'm doing things in the wrong order. I'm ticking, which is setting me to not be on the ground, and then I'm bumping into things, which is setting... Yeah, so I want to just do that in the other order around, I think. Nope, that didn't fix things. Wow, it really didn't fix things. Now I can't even jump. All right, so something really didn't work here. That's unfortunate because I've already used almost half of my time. Okay, so now we need to figure out why this is happening the way it is. So let's do this dot y min y minus half my height. Let's just see what's going on. Let's add a println. This dot bounds dot intersects r. Let's see if there is indeed still an overlap here. I want that to print out a whole lot of... Okay, well, it didn't print out anything. Oh, there it is. It printed out a whole bunch of trues. That's good, so we should always think we're on the ground every single time. I know what we're going to do. We're only going to set this, or say, if the velocity in y is less than zero. So if we're moving up, we could possibly not be on the ground. That'll work nicely. If we're moving up, we're probably not standing on the ground. We still got some jiggling, but at least we can jump every time. So now why do we have jiggling? We have jiggling because we're applying gravity if we're on the ground. So let's say if we're on the ground, we apply friction. Otherwise, we apply gravity. How about that? Okay, so if I'm on the ground, let's ignore gravity. There we are. That makes nice behaviors. Boing! All right, so we're making some progress. We've got something that can jump. We could certainly make other walls because we just made an array list, so let's just really quickly make another wall. Let's just throw in one more wall that we might be able to jump on too. Let's put it, we don't want it to be very wide. Let's make it, 60 wide. Let's make it 100 tall. 100's probably going to be too big. Let's back it up. So if it's 100 tall and the top of what we had before was at 550, so let's make it 450 in Y. And let's put it 300 over there. Let's see. All right, so now we've got a pipe. It's probably going to be too high to jump. Oh, we can jump onto it. Hooray! Uh-oh. Okay, so that didn't work as well as we might have hoped. We have to jump if we want to fall off of things. All right, so we got some problems here, but we're all right-ish. All right, so what we're going to do now is let's make a set on the ground method. So we're going to make public void set not on ground method, and we're going to say this dot on the ground equals false. Okay, and we're going to call that right before we ask to bump into things so that we get to reset whether we're on the ground every time. So this dot, didn't I call it not this dot? This dot jumper dot set not on the ground. Oh, now we got our bouncing back. All right, well, we got somewhere of bouncing going on. I actually don't know why it's bouncing. That suggests that we're not finding an overlap as soon as I expected to find an overlap. It's got multiple frames of moving down before it decides to jump back up. Why do I have multiple frames of moving down before I decide to jump back up? Probably because I did this backwards. There we are. Yeah, all right, that was stupid of me. I thought I was on the top when I was actually on the left. I haven't done the left and right bumping into each other, right? So I'll need to fix that at some point. Let's get rid of that println because it's really slowing me down. Where do I have that println? Okay, so I said that if I was overlapping more in X than in Y, then I must have hit the side, and that's wrong. I must have hit the top, right? So let's go ahead and do the hit the side thing. Okay, so hit the side is going to be very similar. I'm going to decide which side of it I hit. Okay, and I'm going to fix aspects of what's going on in a very similar way. If I hit the side on either side, I'm going to make this as velocity x just equal to 0 because I hit the wall somewhere. And if I am to the right side, then I'm going to say this dot x equals half of my width, which is 10. I was bigger already, plus r dot get max x. Okay, so I'm going to move to that side. I'm going to have to cast that to be in it. No, I'm not. All right. And I'm going to have to do the same thing here, but this time it's going to be min x minus 10 instead. Okay. So that should make me hit walls. Let's see if it works. Bonk. And I can hit that. Oh, well, that didn't work well. Bing. All right, so we got one side working but not the other. And why do I have one side working but not the other? Because... Oh, yeah, else. That can kind of help. All right, I have my else in. Wait for clips to catch up. Bump. Great, so I can bump into that side. I jump over here. I bump into that side. Okay. Now this doesn't behave like Mario because I can't change... Oh, I can change directions in thin air. That's good to know. I didn't remember if I enabled that or not. I do have a little bit of problem, though, because Java doesn't handle holding multiple keys down at the same time. It only lets me hold one key down at the same time, so I can't really do everything I'd want to do, but I'm reasonably okay. So basically the same code should work here. So if I hit the top of something, eventually I want to add some to-do break blocks. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay, but for now we're just going to say this.y equals r.get max y plus half the height of my character. Okay, and so now I should also be able to jump into ceilings. To prove that I can jump into ceilings, let's make a ceiling. So let's make ourselves another wall. Let's copy that one. That works all right for me. Let's make this 200 over. Let's make it 400. Let's make it 50 wide and 30 tall. That should work all right. And I should bump into the ceiling. Yep, I bump into the ceiling. Okay, and I should also be able to jump on top of it. Yeah. It's so hard when you can't hold two keys at once. There we go. All right. So I could jump on top. I don't stop instantly, but I stop pretty quick. And I could fall off the screen. Okay, so we've got a reasonable subset of what's going on here. I've only got 7 minutes left. Do we want me to keep going and try to add some more stuff? I won't finish the game because I won't be able to get both going breaking blocks and killing enemies and having enemies kill you and going down pipes all in 7 minutes. You want to see more? You want to stop and do something else? I want to see more!
Break blocks.
I want to see something else instead. Okay, the majority says we should see something else. All right, so that's how I code. I mean, I usually don't usually do it quite that fast, but that's approximately how I code. Any questions about what I did just then? Okay, you'll get to that point-ish. Not everybody gets to type quite that fast. But there comes a point where you look at something like Joust, and you're like, yeah, I can do that in a couple hours. And that'll happen to you. It'll just take some time. All right, so we watched me live code Joust. I think we got just four left. Kant and Socrates.
Yes.
Cloud. Game design. How computers work. All right, so Kant and Socrates. All right, so before... A little background. I went to first grade, and then I was homeschooled. This was largely because some members of my family had arguments with some teachers that taught some members of my family. Names shall not be mentioned at this time. And so we started homeschooling, and so I first went back to school... After I had graduated, I went to community college for a couple of years. And initially, I thought, math is so cool. And I was right, but there are cooler things. So I studied math for a while. And then I discovered philosophy, and I loved philosophy. So I know a lot about Kant and Socrates. I switched a bit along the way. There are a lot of philosophers I don't agree with. That's why I left philosophy. You have to say what they believe, even if they believe the wrong thing. So anyway. But so, Kant. What does Kant know? Kant is known for the categorical... imperative. And Socrates is known for the Socratic method. All right, so what is the categorical imperative? The categorical imperative says you should always act on some principle that should become a universal law for all people at all times. If I cannot identify the universal law that applies to everybody in every situation that is governing my action, I should not take the action. Okay? So there's no special cases, they don't exist. There's just a set of laws that are always correct. A categorical, in all cases, it is imperative to do this. The Socratic method is really the Platonic idea. Everything about Socrates came from Plato because he's the only guy that wrote about him. But in Plato's dialogue, Socrates basically spends his time asking obvious questions to people and getting them annoyed. He does it very well, I must admit. The Euthyphro and Phaedo, I read them again and again. They're so much fun. Anyway, so Socrates is always about asking questions, asking the obvious questions, and then trying to trick people up with whatever they answer. Most law school is taught with the Socratic method. If you decide to go to that, expect people to cold call on you, ask you questions you're not quite sure what they mean, they sound very simple, you give an answer, and then they try to trip you up. Right? That's how it works. So, categorical imperative and the Socratic method. Both of these show up a lot in software design, although most people don't call them that. Okay? For example, in what I just did, I made my array list private, and I made my jumper private. I didn't do this because I needed them to be private. I did it because there's a categorical imperative: make fields private. And this gets me out of trouble a lot and gets me into trouble never. So it's a good thing to do. It makes the world a better place. And so if I'm a Kantian coder, I will always apply it. Always. I will always put this dot in front of something and so on, because it's the right thing to do. There are cases that it doesn't matter, right? And you may have some Humean walk along and say, oh, you're wasting so much space. And they're right. And so you'll see some places I did not act according to Kant. For example, right here. This is bad. Okay? This line doesn't have any dots and it's doing four things at once and it's just a bad thing to do. But it's short. And when we first got to this, I was worried about time, and so I cut some corners, right? So there's some amount of being Kantian, doing the rule, and there's some amount of not doing the rule and cutting corners. When I teach the rules. I teach the Kantian style because it's easier to remember rules and apply them all the time and not get in trouble than to understand when you can afford to ignore them. So how does Kant code? He codes according to a categorical imperative. There are lots of these categorical imperatives. And as you move on through your life, not just in computing, but wherever you go, you will find people that believe in the categorical imperative to their very soul. And they will do what is always done because it is always done. And not because it makes any sense. Humor them. They'll get over it. The Socratic method is all about asking questions. Asking stupid questions. So, although I did not have time to talk about it as I was doing this right now, when I code, every line of code I write, I ask myself a few questions about it, right? So when I write a line of code like this, normally if I'm not rushing to get it done in super quick time, I will ask myself all kinds of questions like, could I add more this dots? Should I factor this into a separate method instead of doing it right here? Would this be more readable if I added spaces? Would it be more readable if I removed spaces? Should I make the object in a separate line, or should I make it in this line? Do I remember what all of the parameters look like correctly? Okay, I have all these questions I ask myself. They're simple questions, but they can lead to quite involved things. Okay, so for example, when I was working on my jumper down here, at some point I said, I'll make a bounds method. Okay, why did I say I made the bounds method? Because even though I was talking all the time, I was also asking other questions in my head. And one of them was, have I written this before? I ask that question all the time. I was about to ask for the intersection of a rectangle in this thing, and I thought, what are the parameters of the rectangle? They are these numbers right here. I have written that before. I don't like breaking things over and over again. I will pull it out into a separate method. Okay? And if I was going to continue, I then would have said, oh, is there a way I can use the rectangle to fill an oval? I don't think there is, so I didn't bother going down that line. But I would pause, I would look to see, how can I combine things into one place? How can I simplify them? So the Socratic approach to coding, you ask questions all the time. This is very useful if you're coding without running anything along the way. Okay? Because it can help you figure out what's wrong. Every line of code you write on your exam, you ask yourself, what could fail? Is there a better way to write this? And you do that too much and you get confused and Socrates gets killed for it, right? Don't let that happen to you. All right, that's all the time we have for today. I will see you all on Monday for a test review.